TFM.
Welcome, Boomers, to another episode of Warp 5, our dedicated Enterprise podcast. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me, as he always is my esteemed co-host, Matthew Rushing. And Matthew, your hair has never looked better. How long did it take you to grow it out like that?
Chris, let's see. I don't think I've had a haircut since August. Last August, that is. So as we're recording this, it's been a while.
Okay. Well, keep it growing. Degra apparently thinks he's in a competition with you, and so does Archer.
Well, I think Degra's is looking good. I don't know about Archer's. I feel like it's a little bit iffy. He's trying, though. It's a little thin. Yeah. It's a little thin.
Well, all he can do is try. That's all he can do.
It's true.
All right, everyone. We're going to continue our 20th anniversary rewatch of Enterprise today with episode 14 of season 3. This is Stratagem, and here is a quick rundown of the story. With time growing short to locate the Zindi weapon, the Enterprise crew kidnaps Degra, the Zindi primate leading its development, and stages an elaborate ruse, including some long hair for Archer, to trick him into leading them to the finished design before it is deployed against Earth. All right, Matthew. Well, as we talked about last time, things are heating up. The clock's ticking. They've got to find this weapon. And so they decide to resort to some mind games, kidnapping Degra and tricking him, or trying to trick him, into revealing some key information.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is actually an excellent episode of the show. So I'm giving it away right at the beginning that I think it's a really well-done episode of the show. I think it's just so incredibly clever the way in which they're doing this. You know, it feels like things that you've seen before when it comes to the espionage. I mean, they did this thing in, I think it was Mission Impossible Rogue Nation. They actually play this trick on somebody. So we've seen this before where you do a setup of things and you try and make it seem like one thing's happening, but, you know, it's all just a farce. It's just all something you've created. I love it. I think that it also puts in perspective, right, just how desperate Archer is, mm-hmm. how desperate humanity is. After we've seen what happened in the Proving Ground, after we've seen just how close the Zindi are, we got to make a move. We've got to figure this out. We've got to get this done. Otherwise, there might not be any hope left. And so I love that this whole episode is just a rip-roaring adventure of trying to figure this out and doing it any way possible. But I think at the same time, right, one of the things that actually surprises me is that there's a lot of humanity still left in this, right? We're mm-hmm. not torturing Degra.
Right.
We're not doing any of those type of things. And so I think that's interesting. You know, Archer has been down the very dark road before. But here it's like, okay, we're going to try and use deception. You know, we're going to try to use espionage, and yet at the same time, we're not trying to kill him,
mm-hmm.
and we're not trying to maim him, and we're not trying to, leave him altered completely in his mind forever. We just need this information, though. And I thought that that was really interesting, right?
Yeah,
and so.
Yeah, it is interesting because we've talked about through this season that transformation of Archer, how the importance of the mission and the difficulty of finding the weapon and the challenges are starting to push him more and more and more as time goes on, and he knows that it's becoming more and more urgent that they succeed, and he knows what the stakes are. And you see Archer becoming a little bit harder edged, a little bit less trusting, a little bit more willing to use tactics that he wouldn't have used before. And that's been obvious throughout the season. When you think back to the Archer of Broken Bow and those early episodes of the series. And then here, when I watch it, I really get that feeling that they're getting close to being in a desperation mode at this point. They've had to resort to an approach that I think they would have stayed away from in the past. Like, I can't imagine earlier Archer being someone who would really go in for this kind of thing of deceiving someone in this way, just to get the information. Now, Archer is also putting himself at a lot of risk, though, which does play out later in the episode when Dagra gets suspicious and has the knife. But something could have happened at any point. Now, yep. Yeah, of course, you've got Trip and others outside of the shuttle here, so they can charge in as they do. But if something really goes wrong, that's still not enough time, right? So Archer is putting himself at quite a lot of risk here as well. What did you think about the overall approach, though? Like, when we see Hoshi and Paul and everyone in the control room, and then how they're feeding information to Archer, how they're staging this whole thing.
Yeah, I thought that was genius. And a big part of that is because then, and even more so now, you get the feeling like that's how they make these shows.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that all of the things are running on a computer that then controls everything that you're seeing on these monitors, and it can be switched at a moment's notice. And, you know, and I think that there's just something so funny mm-hmm. about seeing that in this episode. And realizing that, yeah, when we think about the way in which, you know, Picard is made and Strange New Worlds and all these things, that's how they're making the show.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's hysterical. And so I absolutely adore that being the fact that that's how they're doing this. And I mean, you know, when we think about just the espionage nature of what they're doing, and, you know, it makes sense that Archer needs to be able to communicate with the team outside, especially mm-hmm. something happened. The fact that they have cameras all over the place, so they're watching, so they know at a moment's notice if they need to go in there. The fact that all of the panels are set up to mirror what's happening in the command center, so that, you know, when he inserts the code, even if he's putting an encryption on it, they're going to be able to break it. And so, like, all of this stuff, it felt incredibly well done and really well thought out mm-hmm. as an opportunity that, okay, we have this guy, we have this ability then to be able to hopefully get information from him without killing him, without breaking him, without any of those things. And so I just really liked that was the conceit of the episode, that that's what we were going to be doing.
Mm-hmm.
And then it made it tense the whole episode, right? Archer is putting himself in danger. Are they going to be able to get this information in time? We know how close that the Zindi are. We're doing everything we can. And I just, that was one of those things where I was like really impressed with the thought process behind creating this episode. And then just watching the team there, the Enterprise team, bring it to life, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So what did you think, especially now in hindsight, since, you know, we've seen this before, we know it's coming.
Mm-hmm.
Did it still work for you?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, when you know what's going on, it reads a little bit differently. When it first aired at the very beginning, you don't know what's going on yet, because sometimes right. you do get time jumps like that. And even in these episodes that we're in right now, you do get short time jumps, you know, like 3 days earlier, things like that. But you're not quite sure what's happening yet at the very beginning until later on. But now, even when you know what's going on, I think it still works quite well, because I think that, you know, you have in Randy Oglesby as Degra and, of course, Scott Bakula as Archer, you've got two really good actors in this confined space together. So it's one of those episodes that you get from time to time on Star Trek, like Duet or Waltz on DS9, these episodes where you've got just two people playing off of each other. And it becomes like a stage play more than this grandiose TV show.
Mm-hmm.
And so it still works well because you can enjoy that kind of dynamic between them. And watching Archer is interesting too, because I was saying that Archer from a bit earlier on probably wouldn't have gone for this kind of tactic. And here he's doing it because they're really desperate for the information. But I think Scott Bakula does a nice job of playing that part of conveying that kind of conflict that Archer has. Like, he doesn't really want to do this to somebody, but it's really important that they get the information. And so that also ties into what you mentioned earlier about the fact that they're not really trying to harm Degra. And I always bring up the inspiration for this season, sort of the genesis of it being the terrorist attacks on the United States. And what comes through here is that because this story is being told in the framework of Gene Roddenberry's vision of the future where, you know, it's a better world. Even though the situation is somewhat mirroring what we lived through at the beginning of the 21st century on Earth, the way it's presented here shows that there's another way that you can do it. So instead of having people being held prisoner and being waterboarded by Americans and being tortured, you have a more humane way of trying to get this information out. Now, I don't think it's great to be playing psychological games with somebody like that, but ultimately, you know, there's no physical harm being done to Degra. You know, they're trying not to harm him in that way. And they're trying not to be cruel, physically cruel to him in that way. They just want to try to get the information. And so, like, in a Starfleet context, in a Star Trek context, what they're doing is a little bit shocking because we don't normally see this kind of behavior from humans in the Star Trek future. But if they have to do it, they're at least wrapping it in a way that I think still fits into the idea that humans can be better than they are today.
Yeah, I agree. You said that, and it made me think that the very classic Backstreet Boys song, "Quit Playing Games with My Mind."
Yeah,
with my mind. That's Degra in this episode, and so
it would have been interesting if that had been playing over like a little bit like a Muzak in the ship there.
Yeah, that would have been very funny.
And then at the end, Archer could say, "Degra, why did it take you so long to catch on? The clue has been there the whole time.
Haven't you been listening? Jeez, I do think that, yeah, you're right. And I think it's again, it's the thing that makes this episode really interesting, and it makes it really well done. And I like that you mentioned the whole idea of having this dual episode, this two-hander, as they would call it in the biz. And it's a dark version of an even darker version, really, of Shuttlepod 1. Right.
Yeah.
That's the type of episode that we're doing. And yet, you know, this isn't just two characters trying to face death. This is two characters locked in a struggle for survival, and who's going to be willing to do what must be done to survive, you know? And that's the thing. I think, look, the beauty of this episode is that it allows us to get to know a character again. We talked about this last time, but this is setting up a character who's going to be really important for the rest of the season in Degra. And so we get this opportunity to know Degra and realize that, yes, he didn't want to be Oppenheimer. That wasn't his plan, mm-hmm. right? Like his goal was not to be this Oppenheimer type character. He was a scientist who was looking to better his people. And the moment that his people learn that humanity is going to try and destroy them, if they don't destroy them first, you know, he is co-opted into creating this weapon of mass destruction.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that there's a real humanizing element then to this character, because once we get the big reveal of the season of what's driving the Zindi actually being a lie, it makes characters like this ones that we can see, oh, that person might just turn around because they don't want to be doing this in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
And so I really like that, because I think, as we talked about as well a little bit in the last episode, in light of knowing what was coming, on all sides of this issue, we're seeing characters reacting to what they actually think is true.
Mm-hmm.
And when you don't have all the facts, you may find yourself in a place and doing things that you think are what needs to be done until all the information comes to light.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just something I was thinking about in reference to just kind of where we are in the world and yeah. how quickly it's becoming much more difficult for anybody to wait for all the facts to come in, because everybody wants to jump the gun, and yeah. it's just getting worse and worse at all anymore. Yeah.
I mean, you know, one of the things you notice all the time in news articles these days is at the end of the article, it says, so-and-so did not immediately reply for comment, right? Like,
right.
You can't wait you know. To get information yeah. that you need to actually tell an accurate story. You just write what you think. And then at the end, you put a disclaimer like, well, I sent them an email. They didn't respond to me in 15 seconds. And so,
yeah,
shogunai, you know, like, so, and then people in general, yeah, these days are too impatient. They can't wait for anything. And also, now it's becoming difficult to be able to believe the things that you do see. So, yeah. So I think, yeah, this is very applicable to today's world.
No, 100%. And so, all that said, you know, the interesting aspect with Degra here is this face-to-face meeting with the two people who are responsible for what's happening. And the fact that neither of them realizes the whole yet mm-hmm. is also really interesting, especially in hindsight. And that's something that I really like about this episode, is that, you know, these two men have been coerced basically into doing the thing that they don't want to be doing because they want to save their world.
Yeah.
And in that, they're not all that different. That's the beauty of it, right? Mm-hmm. They're not different. You know, their desire is the same. And so it becomes one of those things too, when you're immediately put on the opposite side from one another, it becomes very difficult to see your similarities, mm-hmm. to see the things that actually might bring you together instead of the things that will you know, break you apart.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the fun thing about this episode too, in hindsight, right? We are having the seeds planted of the things that are actually going to bring them together instead of tear them apart. Mm-hmm. And that's fun too. So,
well, and the level to which they're coerced to do it, initially, especially Degra, you know, being a scientist, he's told, well, we need to develop this thing because we need to protect ourselves. We have to do it before someone else. And initially, it can be viewed as a scientific problem and a technical problem. And so as a scientist, you're like, okay, well, how could we do yeah. this? And you try to figure it out. And once he actually sees the prototype weapon being used and killing 7 million people, it's at that point
yes.
that it really yep. hits him. And that's where, again, you get, he's like the Oppenheimer character of, once you see what your creation can actually do,
yeah,
and not just what it can do, but what it did, like it actually happened, yes. then it really hits you what you're doing. And I think the way they build this Degra story helps make him believable as a character, because it's not like some stories that we've seen, say, on The Next Generation or Voyager, where because of the episodic nature of the show, the person who's responsible for something has to come to terms with it in the moment. You think of like Jatril on Voyager or something like that. This is kind of like a slow burn for Degra. And so that breathing room, and this is also where I think that a season like this is so much better than a season of a modern TV show where we only get 8 or 10 episodes. Here, they've got enough time to let this idea breathe and let us watch Degra go from the person who's developing the weapon to the person who realizes that this isn't the right thing to do.
Well, and I think that's, like you just said, too, because you have more time to do this, it's also the thing that's going to allow that to happen for Archer, right?
Mm-hmm.
To go from believing that these people needed to be annihilated to being a person who wants to try and save as many of them as he can, right? That he doesn't want to be their enemy. And that, you know, you can do that so much better when you have a longer season that allows you to really, you know, sit with these characters and allow that to happen over a progressive amount of time, instead of like, you know, what we've talked about with something like Strange New Worlds, or, you know, even those first couple seasons of Picard, where it's like characters have to make these jumps, it seems like, incredibly quickly with the story that they're telling, and it can seem a little bit false. Whereas this, especially watching in hindsight, it's like, oh no, this is exactly the type of thing that you need all these building blocks to get to that point. You know, these big leaps of logic are really difficult in a short time span, and they don't feel as believable, especially when you're considering something this big, which I think is another thing that it's true to real life, and it's true to the thing that it's based off of, in the sense that, you know, the thought process around all that happened with 9/11 and everything afterwards, there was a good, there was a bad, and then there were the places in which we needed to learn. And that didn't happen overnight.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. That's taken years and years of reflection, which is the importance of humanity and history. And so, yeah, I really appreciate the way that they're building this. And I think it's smart, it's competent, and it does make me miss, you know, longer seasons of television.
Yeah.
Or it may be at least seasons of television that don't take, you know, we kind of mentioned this last time, but like 4 years to get the next episode right, where we just don't even remember what happened.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I think this is great.
Yeah. All right. Well, any final thoughts, and what's your rating for this one?
Yeah, I mean, this is another super strong episode of the season. I honestly can't think of anything that's wrong with this episode. I don't know. Maybe in your final thoughts, you've got something that stood out to you. But to me, I just got to give this 5 out of 5 long-haired archers, because I think this is like, this section of the season has just been really strong. It does feel like they've hit the ground running in the second part of the season, and they're really driving towards the end now. And so this duology of episodes, which, you know, literally take place back to back, right? Yeah. They've just come back to the Proving Ground 3 days prior, after their experience with Shran. And so I love it. I think it's really well done. And honestly, the fun part about this is it makes me really excited just to keep going with this season, because I was hard pressed not to continue watching, you know, the next episode of the DVD, because I want to go to what's next. So what about you, Chris?
Well, I mean, I guess the only thing wrong with it is that Dr. Phlox did not give me one of these anti-intoxicant shots. You know, those sound pretty useful. when you're going to go out drinking with your friends. But the whole episode it's really well put together. It's very tight. You know, our discussion actually is a little bit shorter than usual on this one, I think. And it's probably because it's such a straightforward episode. There's this one goal that's going on. It's kind of the ultimate bottle show where it really does take place in this little confined area. I hadn't thought of it as a darker shuttle pod one, but yeah, you're right. It is a lot like that. And yeah, I think they're really firing on all cylinders at this point here, pushing us through into the second half of the season. Oh, I didn't mention, you'll appreciate this, I'm sure, this is the second episode of Enterprise written by Terry Metalis.
Oh, wow.
Who, the first one was Impulse, but of course he goes on to bring us season 3 of Picard with the wonderful reunion of the Enterprise D crew. So, yeah, no, it's a really great episode. I'm going to give it 9 Regulan blood worms, which are totally harmless. Don't worry about it. No problem. You'll be fine.
Your lymphatic system is really going to thank you, though, Chris.
Yeah, it's going to be all cleaned out. It's going to be great. Well, everyone, we would love to hear your thoughts on Stratagem. There are many ways for you to share those with us. Perhaps the easiest way is to go to Facebook and join the Babel Conference. That is our listeners group. It's there to extend the conversations beyond the podcasts. So if you're joining for the first time, please do answer the questions and agree to the rules of the forum so that I can let you in. You'll find a post there on the timeline for this episode. And you can share your thoughts with Matthew and me and fellow listeners right there. You can also send us email. Go to our website, trek.fm/contact. Use the form you find there. Choose to send to a show, and that'll come right over to us by email. And you can find us everywhere in social media. Our username is TrekFM. And if your podcast app of choice allows you to leave a rating and a review, we would love to get that from you as well. Now, Matthew, when you're not trying to remember the names of Degra's children, where can people find you?
Must have slipped my mind. I guess I took a little too much of that serum. Anyway, you can find me all over the place on social media under the name MattRushing02. Of course, I'm also here outside of all the great Star Trek talk in the 602 Club, where we talk about all of those franchises we love outside this great franchise. You can find me over on the Nerd Party Network with a couple shows, one talking about Harry Potter series, one chapter at a time, over on Owlpost. And then the great John Mills and I are talking about Star Wars each and every week with aggressive negotiations. But, you know, Chris, when you're not trying to figure out just how long you're going to let your hair grow, where can people find you?
I don't have to worry about that, Matthew. I don't have enough hair left to do that. So
you can really get the sides going, I think, just see how long you can get it. Or, you know, maybe you need a real long beard, you know.
I could do the long beard, I think. Yeah, I could probably do that. Yeah, no, my hair will start growing out and I'll say, I really need a haircut. My wife's like, no, you don't. You're fine. Anyway, you can find me elsewhere on the network doing all those shows with you. Of course, Larry Nemechek and I have a new episode of The Ready Room out where we look back at season 3 of Strange New Worlds. And you can find me throughout the network on many, many shows from the last 15 years talking about every corner of the Star Trek universe. So check those out if you want to hear my thoughts on other things. And you can also find me in social media. My username is C. Brian Jones. That's the letter C and Brian with a Y. That's my username everywhere. Blue Sky is where I'm most active, but you can find me wherever you are. So go ahead and drop me a line. And if you'd like to help us keep this rewatch and everything else we're doing on the network going, we could definitely use your help to find out how to get involved, how to support the network. Please visit patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm. We don't have ads on our shows, as you know, so we do rely on your support. And we thank everyone who is supporting us now. Well, Matthew, I know you've been feeling a little tense lately, but don't worry. Next time, Corporal Cole will be happy to help you with some neuropressure as we talk about Harbinger.
Oh, I guess that's where that crick in the neck came from. Let's go.